From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Frack. Oh, I'm picking out a thermos for you. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Tonight, it is Monday, July 26th, 2010.
And this is show. We got a really awesome Skype connection going here. I'm sure this is going to be a very smoothly running podcast. It is show 092.
Well, that was just me tripping over myself, and I figured if I tripped over the first one, I may as well go all the way.
Yes, but when you are tripping over yourself, you also sounded on my end like an old school Cylon.
Really?
Yeah, it got all fuzzy and robot-y.
Oh, I wish I could have heard that.
Yeah.
Okay, first the quick, easy business to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And because we're proud of them, we have 334 minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
Hello, minions.
We are running a little behind, so if you sent in your application, do not worry. It is going to happen. Yep. Go to paulandstorm.com to find out about that.
Yeah.
And I think there's pretty much only one, that is one/two things we're really going to talk about today.
Yeah. And that, of course, is Amway products.
Correct.
Haha, see what I did there? I made a joke that was not an answer you were expecting.
Well, I'd have to say it was not the precise answer I was expecting, but the misdirection was
Yeah, see, comedy good. Is all about subverting expectation, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, Storm is talking about San Diego Comic-Con 2010 and the associated Woodstock we performed thereby.
You know, I still don't have a grip on the proper way to write Comic-Con.
It is with a dash.
That's sort of what I went to, but it seems like there are many acceptable ways
there
to spell
are.
It.
Like, the official way is with a dash, but it's like, you know, the official way of spelling Dragon Con is with an asterisk, and I call bullshit on that.
Well, I think the comic dash con thing, it's almost like base dash ball, like in a different era, made sense.
Or China dash man.
Much more like China dash man, and that we are now in a modern age, and yeah, there's really no need for the dash.
That's right. The camel case is fully accepted these days.
When comic dash con was first initiated, yeah, there was no camel case.
Yeah, yeah, or at least it certainly was not in the parlance of our times.
No, or they could have gone the German way and just, you know, put everything into one big word, you know,
yes.
Comic-Con International for everyone, come here now to go do the comic stuff.
Yeah.
One word.
That's pretty much incredibly accurate. Also, you know, camel case is a word, I think I got that from you. I had never heard of that word. I think you're the one who introduced me to it back in our Da Vinci's notebook days.
You know, I coined the phrase. No, I saw it somewhere. I guess it was in an instruction manual or someplace. You know how you're sitting around reading instruction manuals, and there it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it kind of makes sense. Well, I don't know many camels that have, you know, like five humps when there are words like that.
Yeah.
I guess that would be a pentiary camel.
Strictly in Dr. Seuss books, I believe. And they are not then called camels. They are called, you know, flunder scrimps.
So I think we were talking about this on this trip, how sometimes my mind is just speeding so fast that it can't organize itself and it just doesn't come out at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of how I feel about where to start, what to say about Woodstock and Comic-Con. There was so much that happened that awesome.
Let's start with Comic-Con, I think. Let's start macro and get micro. Let's start with the stuff that was entirely new to us and then zero in on the stuff that wasn't. thereby hopefully having it be less a complete litany of exact things that happened.
Oh, no, because it was our first ever Comic-Con, you know.
We did New York, which is really not the same.
No, like when you say Comic-Con and just say Comic-Con, I think people understand you to mean, you know, Comic-Con Prime, the original San Diego.
Yeah.
And we had done cons, and we'd done, of course, Dragon Con and a couple of others, and had been told there's certainly nothing else like it, and it's certainly true. Mm-hmm. I guess when you've been doing something for as many years as they have, it grows considerably. I think my overall biggest surprise is one of the impressions I've been given was that it was just so commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And while that was certainly true to a point, like there was certainly a huge presence by like movie studios and, you know, big industry folks.
Yeah.
I did not feel like that was all it was about.
Yeah.
Like, we'll talk about it more later, but like our friends who do The Guild, the web series, there was a lot of stuff like that that was more organic. Granted, it may not have had, the sway and pull of the studios and didn't have huge giant banners everywhere.
Yeah.
But,
And to be fair, we mostly stayed away from, you know, Comic-Con being, you know, I guess it's something like 100,000 people at this point attend it over the course of the weekend.
I think 160,000 is what they say.
Well, whatever, yeah. However the hell big it is.
Lot load.
Yes, yes. And given an event of that size, there are of course going to be sort of multiple possible experiences with it. It's not like, you know, Walt Disney World where, you know, they all come in through the front door and everybody sort of goes through the same process. They might do it in a different order, but, you know, you're going to go hit Space Mountain and you're going to go to Frontierland and you're gonna go, you know, have explosive diarrhea after the second day of eating terrible overpriced fried food.
Well, we got that part of it.
Yeah, we got that out of the way early. But
we skipped Frontierland.
Yeah. But, you know, there are lots of people who spend their entire day in Hall H, which is the large, I think it holds something like 6,000 to 7,000 people, and it's the room basically where all the big Hollywood studios do all of their announcing and sneak previews of upcoming things. Like, it's where they had the panel where they brought in everyone who's going to be part of the Avengers movie, and they showed a big clip of Tron, and there's that whole end of things, which involves waiting in line for a whole lot of hours and or sitting in that same hall for a whole lot of hours. And to that extent, it certainly has just sort of become, you know, a Hollywood publicity machine.
Yeah,
but we tended to avoid that whole aspect of it, and you know, here's where our, you know, Hollywood douchebag we know people thing came out. We basically only attended a few panels. It was the ones where we didn't have to wait in line, where we knew somebody who could get us on sort of the reserved list.
Just totally agreeing, and like for me, it's honestly not a douchebag thing, like. I would avoid Comic-Con or any event like it just because of crowds in general, mm-hmm. you know, not mm-hmm. because I feel like, oh, you know, we're entertainers. We deserve to get through, you know, but just can't deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, to
yeah,
sit
exactly.
for 2 hours for, you know, a preview clip that maybe they put together 5 minutes beforehand of them, you know, masturbating into a ketchup bottle.
That's all it is. That would be awesome if every single major Hollywood film preview was just the cast masturbating into a ketchup bottle that had the logo for that particular movie.
Or not even the cast members, just like the, you know, just
a couple of grips.
Well, yeah, a couple of grips.
Hence the name. I bet you all didn't know that's what you know, when you see the credits roll by and you see Key Grip, that's the best masturbator on the on the crew.
If this is your first time listening to our podcast, we swear we're not all about the masturbation jokes. Now and then, but not always.
But nonetheless, yeah, your point is well taken. Like, I wasn't saying it to be like, hey, check us out, we get into these panels.
No,
your point is well taken that, you know, we did it that way because, you know, neither of us really wanted to do the whole waiting in line thing. That, not to say that that's not a valid thing. I heard I read a number of blogs of people talking about how for lots of people, the waiting in line is the best part because you're standing around with a bunch of other people who are just as enthusiastic about the thing as you are, and you form a little community. So I don't disparage it. It's just not the kind. It's not, you know, a thing that we care to do. So
we're just not line waiters.
No, we're not. But I forget exactly where I was going. I guess we were talking about how the panels we did see, like our friends on the Guild and the Venture Brothers panel, which is an animated series on Cartoon Network Adult Swim, and the Legend of Neil panel, another web series. They were very, you know, it was very fan centric. You know, they're homegrown shows, so to speak, a little less so Venture Brothers, but even so, it's a much lower profile television show, and it was very much more just sort of a fan-oriented event as opposed to a hype-building machine.
Yeah, and I really appreciated that. Granted, those were the type of things that we saw. Basically, it worked out that the things we really wanted to see were the ones that we could get into.
Mm-hmm.
We also went to the Riff Tracks panel that they had on Friday night, and it was cool. Like, they actually, pretty much their Q&A part was that people could pitch ideas to do riffs. If you don't know Riff Tracks, it's basically the Mystery Science Theater thing where they do funny commentary over well-known or obscure movies. And they will take that information and do that. You know, they'll take what the audience wants.
They basically took an audience poll, a lengthy audience poll, as to what they should do for upcoming Riff Tracks. And that was really cool.
While we're on the subject of the panels and all, mm-hmm. one of my huge highlights was during the Guild panel.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have heard about it. If you don't know what the Guild is, it is a web series starring Felicia Day with this incredible cast and well-produced. And they did a Bollywood-style video.
Oh, my God. That thing.
That literally, if you've ever seen any Bollywood, even a clip of it, you know it's ornate and there's music and dancing, very slick. And
ridiculous.
Outlandish. And not only did they totally nail it, but they did it on less than $100,000.
Oh,
you know?
far
they less. They did it on pocket lint, and it's not out yet. Of course, this is one of the great things about going.
By the time you hear this podcast, actually, it's out tomorrow. Tomorrow our time. So,
okay. Well, you.
But as we speak,
out,
it is not we, out.
We know that it's unlikely that most of you have seen it at this point.
Fair enough.
But when you do see it, and I forgot what my point was.
The comic. You like how I interrupted you and totally threw off your train of thought?
Well, I just got home a few hours ago from the plane journey back, so my mind isn't quite as sharp. I'm so excited that I can think of cool things. I just can't keep hold of them for long.
At
any rate, very exciting. I'll just say it was a highlight.
Yes.
So
yeah, absolutely, 100%. I mean, that was the thing for me too. Like, you know, we know some of the people involved, so we know just how little budget they had to make this thing. And as I remarked to them after seeing it, not only does it look really great considering the budget that they have, it just looks really good.
Yeah. No. When I heard that they spent on it, my eyes, they didn't literally pop out of my head because I don't like that use of literally when it's not literal, like actually happened.
Yeah.
They virtually popped out of my head, though.
They
sure did.
If you were to put on one of those VR helmets that you used to think were going to be everywhere from 10 years ago.
Oh, I would have been like laser Popeye.
Yeah, you'd have been awesome. It was a lot of that. We hit a number of panels, like that, and that was lots of fun. And we walked the floor a bit. We didn't really get much of a chance to walk the floor. I wish I'd had a bit more of a chance to just take my sweet old time and browse, because it's just this huge, overwhelming pile of options. I mean, there's all the sort of big Hollywood studio booths with huge signs and repeating trailers for upcoming movies and TV shows on loops. And there's also like the video game booths that are big and loud. But there's, you know, there's also just a bunch of, you know, a huge pile of artists doing fantasy and sci-fi art and you know, used bookstore things. And
imagine your favorite comic shop or shop like it, or the best one you ever saw, and then multiply that by about 1,000, and then put into that room a lot of the people who actually make the stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what you got.
Yep. For the geeks out there, it's sort of a slightly cleaner Mos Eisley spaceport.
Of course, probably you have probably already been, if not to Comic-Con, to a con. So, you know, but in case you haven't, it's definitely something you should experience.
Yeah.
It really is incredible.
Yeah. And it's not like the crowds were so ridiculous you couldn't move ever at all. You know, it's certainly an overwhelming crowd. And there were times when you would just sort of have to move along with a given crowd for a bit.
Now, I don't want to.
No, that's okay.
I was going to say, it reminded me of another thing that I don't want it to sound douchebaggy, but I was surprised how many folks came up and said hi to us when we were walking around.
Yes, that was extremely flattering and cool, especially considering the number of people in that building. I was thinking the same thing. I do not consider it douchebaggy at all, especially because you say it. Because usually I'm the one to say it, and I am much more inherently douchebaggy.
So thank you. If you were at Comic-Con and you came up to us, thank you. And everybody who did so at the appropriate times, which we appreciate that. And we really do love talking to folks. Like, we trailed along a little bit with folks like Felicia Day and Chris Hardwick. And I feel like we're at a great level where, you know, they can't really walk 10 feet and not be stopped by someone very nice, you know, to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just imagine how much energy it takes for anybody to basically be on the whole time.
Yep.
But certainly for us, it's just a total pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was more or less our Comic-Con experience. You want to swing on over to the Wootstock experience?
Yeah, it's tricky because I don't want to be all chronological and listy about it.
Let's just try not to dwell.
Okay. Well, I would like to call out what I feel are sort of the two big things that happened, or at least in my mind.
Sure.
For me, it was sort of an arc that went from before the show began until after and beyond.
Yep.
And you may have seen it if you follow us on Twitter, or followed Wootstock. If you were at Wootstock, you were very aware of it. And this was Free Molly.
Yes.
And what happened was, this venue, it worked out well. We wanted to do Comic-Con very badly. And this venue, it was the right size. And it was a last-minute thing. But it's more of a rock club. It is a rock club. So a space that people go and for, you know, a hard rock show, you know, like the kids like, or hip hop or what have you, like Snoop Dogg was there a couple of days after.
3-6 Mafia.
Yeah.
Ted Nugent.
So they're used to, you know, a certain type of act and a certain type of crowd. And part and parcel of that is it's a 21 and up venue.
Yes.
And it turns out they are very strict about this.
Well, they actually, they have a specific type of liquor license called a cabaret license. I don't know specifically what it involves, but it's actually that is what caused the wrinkle you were about to get into is not just their own personal policies, but
no.
because of the nature of their particular license.
So, yes, please bear that in mind as we tell this tale, that it's not like the venue had a choice on this.
Yep.
But the situation was what it was, and one of our performers, Molly Lewis, who you probably know, if not, seek her out, she's under 21.
Yes.
By just a few months.
Yeah.
But because of that, she could perform, but had to be outside of the venue, except for when she performed. And when she performed, she had to be escorted in. At all times.
Yep.
Have a handler.
Security had to be standing on stage while she was on stage.
And certainly, you know, we poked and prodded at their policies to see if there any way to do it. Could she stay on stage the whole time?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and we actually had someone on stage the whole time, our friend Len Peralta, who was doing art. But no, it wouldn't work because, you know, we didn't want them to get into trouble.
Yeah, it'd be like a ridiculous fine for them. So, again, like Storm says, we're not blaming them for this because who wants to spend $50,000 or whatever it is?
or lose your license, which is game, set, match.
Yeah, and bear in mind also, we didn't know about this. It just didn't occur to us to ask because we knew it was a 21 and up venue, but we'd performed in places like this before where it doesn't apply to the performers.
So poor Molly, we were all crestfallen, but seeing her face was heartbreaking.
Oh,
and
awful.
There's a door just off of the stage left area that faces out into just this parking lot, mm-hmm. like which to me looked like a setting for a zombie apocalypse.
It kind of did.
There was like, you know, cars in the lot, and then there's sort of not really tall buildings, but the type of tall buildings that, say, a low-budget zombie film director might yep. have access to, and you can imagine zombies coming down one street and the other and getting Molly, poor Molly, sitting there,
yep.
under 21, unable to drink to anesthetize herself as the zombies gnaw away at her guts and brains.
Mm-hmm.
But she really made the most of it, jeté to Paul.
You've jeté to me. Yes, I don't know who made the first suggestion of it, but it caught on like wildfire.
It was me.
It was you? Well, then all hail you, Storm, for coming up with the brilliant idea of holding what came known as Molly Stock.
Yes. The and idea...
Jeté back to you, since you came up with the idea.
Sure. But it just seemed like, you know, it just wasn't fair and it would just suck. As much as we would all try to go back and spend time with her throughout the night, you know, it wouldn't be possible to just make a scene. So the idea was have a concert back there. And it was her idea, or maybe Will's, I'm not sure, to promote it as a thing to do during the intermission.
I know I mentioned that. I don't know if I came up with it independently or just don't remember hearing about it and thinking that I came up with it.
At any rate, it was decided that we would promote it, which we did on both Twitter, and we announced it from the stage that Molly would do Molly Stock at intermission. And it was really one of those... Like, you know, the movie Almost Famous, where they're all sitting in the bus and they all start singing. It's cheesy as hell, but you love it anyway.
Yep.
Or like any of those John Hughes movies where there's, you know, a heartwarming scene.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Molly
throughout
the first half. She performed in the first half. So she, you know, she had a little bit of audience love in there. But then she was relegated back to the zombie parking lot.
Yep.
And then
she spent the whole show basically peeking in from that door.
Yes. Yes. It was such a not Orwellian, but,
it was like those Keen paintings, the kids with the big eyes, all the sad kids.
That's she does have Keenian eyes.
Yes.
And then the zombies did come out around the corner, except for there weren't zombies at all. They were music lovers and people with a keen sense of justice.
Yes.
And inside of, I'd say, 5 minutes, there was a throng of maybe 200 people.
Yeah. You can see it on YouTube. There's a number of videos of it out there. And it's just awesome to see.
Yeah, she just, plays the crowd. People are singing along, making suggestions for things to sing. And it really was one of those spontaneous moments that you can't plan to have, but that is a horrible reason why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the sort of thing that, you know, as a performer and as an event producer, you know, you hope you'll have moments like that.
Yep.
That is sort of the real soul of music and performance to me.
Exactly right. And Will talked about this a bit on his blog today. the thing that I love about Molly is, you know, if I, you know, 20-year-old Paul ran into that situation and your bouncer says, "You're too young, you can't be in this building," I would have been so sad and upset and outraged. That just would have been it for me. I wouldn't have been able to function pretty much. But not only did Molly just sort of, you know, she resigned herself to the situation and decided to make the best of it. The one thing we didn't mention, she also, over the course of an hour the show, learned, along with Jason Finn, the drummer, learned a cover of Save Ferris's Under 21 and performed it during her set on stage.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, A, that's awesome. and B, that takes real real chutzpah. And a certain well, again, as Will puts it, it's why Mali is a national treasure.
Oh yeah. While we're talking about Mali, this wasn't one of the two big things, but one of my favorite things about any performance, but really what we've seen happen at Woodstock a lot, which is these creative worlds colliding in a good way, and sometimes it's things that you don't expect would meet, say, you know, an astronomer and a musician, and they collaborate on something, whatever.
Yeah.
But I believe we played one of her songs on a recent podcast, and we were very excited to hear and to meet Marion Call.
Yes.
And Marion and Mali were aware of each other and met at Woodstock, and just seeing the two of them talk some and hang out was really neat. I kind of felt like, again, the movie type of thing where they do a flashback and you see when the two characters, you know, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid still meet, not that they'll form a band or anything.
Right.
But that was mighty neat as well.
That was very cool. Shall I talk about the second thing?
Yeah, this one's for you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, this one's me. So, let me find the least douchebaggy way of getting into this.
Well, the podcast thing.
Yeah, well, that's right. Through friends of friends, we know Mo Tancharoen, who, for those of you who don't know who she is one of the people who helped write Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. And she's also done writing for Dollhouse and things like that, along with her husband. And we'd put her in her husband.
And currently writing on Spartacus.
Yes, that's right, Spartacus, Blood and Sand. Good, I forgot. And a very talented musician and just a really nice person. We put her and her husband on the guest list and thought not much else of it. You put a lot of people on the guest list at a thing like this, and some of them show up, some of them don't. About halfway through the show, it was during Mollystock I discovered this, which is why I couldn't fully participate in Mollystock the way I wanted to. Mm-hmm. Basically, it turned out that the box office closed partway at least through the first half. And our guest list was kind of complicated because some people were getting all access badges and some people were getting some access stickers and some people were just getting tickets, blah, blah, blah. And so they didn't give security our guest list. They just that was what they decided to how they decided to solve that problem was just leave the guest list in the box office. Come to find out during intermission that Mo and her husband showed up at the door, and since security didn't have the guest list, they couldn't get in and were turned away at the door. And now is where I reveal the fact that her husband is Jed Whedon. And not only, yes, that kind of Whedon. And they showed up with Mo's brother-in-law, Joss Whedon. Which is to say, Joss Whedon showed up at the door of Woodstock, San Diego, and was not let into the building.
If you are not a frequent, if you're new to our podcast, for a long time we had something called Whedon Watch, in which it is still a wish to meet Joss Whedon. He's someone that we love and respect greatly.
Yeah, I mean the specific request and requirement is that he acknowledge us.
Yes,
whatever that might mean. We'd originally had Felicia Day watch, and that well over a year ago, that came true, and then we implemented Whedon Watch and McCartney Watch. Paul McCartney was not at Comic-Con. Joss Whedon was. Joss Whedon basically was, 50 feet from a room jam-packed with nerds.
Yeah.
And couldn't get in.
If there was... I can hardly think of another person. Maybe Neil Gaiman. Maybe Leonard Nimoy, like other people you could possibly turn away that would be the least appropriate. Mm-hmm. So that was a heartbreak.
Yeah, that was. If anyone out there has seen the Simpsons episode where Bart has a crush on a girl, and there's a very graphic scene of her breaking his heart, and then literally sort of, you know, fantasy scene where she rips his heart out of his chest and throws it against a wall and it falls into a wastebasket. That's what happened to each of us as we found out about this story.
I believe Will told me, and 10-minute mark was about 19 minutes ago.
Almost, yes.
I have two other sort of... everything was so awesome. I want to talk about everything, but there are two specific things that I'd like to call out.
Go right ahead.
And one of them is actually more of a kind of as Comic-Con went on thing, is Grant Imahara.
Yes.
He possibly saved my life. It might be a little bit of a stretch, but as part of what we were doing, I ended up going out on stage in a Chewbacca costume that is owned by Adam Savage.
Yeah.
And Grant came to Woodstock, and he actually ended up coming on stage for a cameo, which was really fun.
Yeah.
But as I was suiting up, someone came up to help me put the thing on, and it was Grant. And it makes sense. He's quite used to, you know, working with costumes and certainly electronics and such.
Yep.
And basically made sure that I got the costume on, that I didn't die of dehydration, and that I made it on and off.
Yeah, I was going to say, or falling up or down the stairs.
Yes, which is a very easy thing to do, because the Chewbacca costume has like 8-inch lifts on top of these sneakers. It's very impressive. I believe there's a video out there, which will probably, when we put together our post for this, we'll put it on there, playing guitar as Chewbacca. But then as the weekend went along, we kept running into him, and just all the Mythbusters folks were just so much fun to be around.
Yes.
But I would like to thank Grant for saving my neck.
Yes, good on him. Oh, and also, speaking of Mythbusters, Jamie Heineman, in case you had not seen, he did a quick little walk on cameo. That was awesome. Before you get into your second thing, just while I'm thinking of it, the thing that we love about Woodstock, if I may speak for both of us, one of the many things we love about Woodstock, and one of our original intentions when we were trying to put it together, is we thought that it should be as much fun for the people participating in it as those out in the audience, which is to say, you know, if the people who are putting it on are having a good time, that is going to bleed through into the audience's enjoyment of it. And it just... You know, it's not like we have some sort of scientific formula as to how to make that happen. We just try and pick people who are not dicks and who seem like they would get along and have a good time doing this. And it has just been overwhelming to us. Like, every single participant in this show is just having as good a... We promise you, everyone is having as good a time backstage as everyone is out front. And I couldn't be happier about that fact.
A lot of credit for that. It's certainly something that we all firmly believe in. But I remember when we were first having the initial discussions, like us and Will, just kind of shooting ideas around, I think the first thing he said was, okay, we don't invite anybody who is not just cool to be around.
Anybody with a reputation for being, you know, difficult.
Or diva-ish.
We don't need to deal with.
And that it really did feel like a gathering of peers from across the geek spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Just was happy to be a participating fly on the wall.
Yep.
So that was nice.
Oh, and Chief.
That was my other.
That's a code word. Go to it.
Yes. So Aaron Douglas, the actor who played Chief Tyrell on Battlestar Galactica, BSG. He is a friend of Will's from long times, pretty long times. I guess they met on the con circuit.
Right.
And I wish we had Will on the podcast to tell it, but he did agree to come to Woodstock and do a walk-on cameo. And I guess in the days before, he was concerned, well, maybe people won't recognize me if I just walk on just as myself in, you know, a t-shirt and jeans or whatever. Is it okay if I wear the orange suit that I wore on the show? Is it okay?
Yeah, would you guys mind?
Yeah. And he did. He walked out and did a very funny toaster joke. You'll have to find the video on it. We're not
spoiler
here to do blow by blow.
Alert.
But it got spoiled for me. If you haven't seen it, blah, 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 blah.
That's right. If so, if it's spoiled for you, it's spoiled for everybody.
Well, there, that's no, a good question. What is the freshness date on spoilers?
Yeah, it's true. It has been a number of years now at this point.
I would say a year is about right. Cause
a year, certainly a year from the end of any series. Maybe
correct.
Not a year from the occurrence, but...
No, a year from the end of a series. I'm going to declare that because it's reasonable...
Yeah,
that someone wouldn't see something immediately in this age of multi-platform media consumption.
Yeah, I'm putting that in the book. That's in the rule book now.
Right. Spoiler is no longer a spoiler if it's 1 year or more after the end of said thing, whatevers.
Yep.
Whatevs.
There it is.
He's also a very funny storyteller. Like in the backstage scene, he added a lot to the fun. He told a story that involved Sean Connery that we may not repeat here. We may not repeat that will stick with me for a long time.
It's so a good one.
That was another unexpected fun thing that happened.
Yep. Woodstock, another raging success. Hooray, hooray, hooray for us. It only bodes well for the future Woodstocks. I've seen a number of people, we put out the call on Twitter. We've said this before, but it does bear repeating because people, you know, easily our most asked question is, when are you bringing Woodstock to insert name of my town or town near me here? We really do want to do a lot more of these. Everybody is on board to do them, and we have no shortage of people wanting to participate in them. A lot of it is just trying to arrange everyone's schedules to align to be able to make it happen, because you know we're a working touring group, and Will and Adam are, you know, busy people with their own other careers. Mm-hmm. So it is by no means that we. For a lack of wanting that we haven't come to your town yet, and pretty much any city that anyone names that is within an hour or two of a major airport, they're probably on our list of places that we want to bring Woodstock to sooner rather than later. And we promise you, we hear you when you ask. I'm not saying don't ask, but I'm just saying, you know, we're working on it.
Now, this is sort of a tangential, selfless plug. It is not Woodstock. It's not going to be a performance like Woodstock, and Adam Savage isn't even going to be there. But the only thing on the books that even sort of has the reek of Woodstock is the upcoming, if you consider January 2011 upcoming, the Joko Cruise Crazy that we are doing with Jonathan Colton and
Colton fan cruise
and a whole raft of geeky celeb types, not Adam Savage. No,
nope.
And it is not a Woodstock, but it is an opportunity to, there's going to be a lot of the same spirit.
It is certainly Woodstock friendly.
There we go.
Woodstock adjacent. Friendly.
But you can go to paulandstorm.com where you can certainly find a wink. You'll find a wink.
You will find a wink.
We will put a wink. You'll find a wink to the Joko Cruise Crazy. Find out the details. Yes, it is relatively expensive. It's certainly much more than buying a ticket to a show, but you're also getting an entire vacation, plug complete.
That's right. I think that's... I'm just looking at the Twitter suggestions. I think we've covered most of what anybody has asked about.
Oh, I didn't even look. Wow, I just knew we had so much Woot talking to do.
Yeah.
And really, we're at like the many minutes
it's
mark.
It's the 38 plus minute mark at this point. But that's okay.
I could literally talk for, and this time I mean literally, another 2 hours about Woodstock and Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. I can go through, you know, the entire list of guests because everyone was phenomenal. It's like, imagine if you're a baseball fan or even if you know baseball at some of the greatest players in history, you know, all on one team. Like the greatest all-star team. That's what it feels like at every Woodstock.
That's what it is. You know what it is? It's sort of a nerd fantasy football thing.
Bingo.
Where you're picking your favorite players and you're putting them all on one team. And that's kind of what we get to do. which is really cool and awesome. And as we probably don't say it enough, if we do say it, we really do appreciate everyone out there who comes to the shows, who talks about the shows, who blogs about it, who posts videos and pictures, who asks that it come to their place, who tells their friends to go. We don't do any advertising for the show beyond, you know, Twitter and our websites and you people out there. So thank you for all of that.
I was going to say, you know, if the Rootstock cast is the team that very much the audience and people who are interested in are part of the team too, and the opponent is Suck.
I think we have our title for this podcast.
And I guess we're 8-0 against Suck so far.
So far.
Or is it 7? However many.
Yeah.
Rootstock, Infinity, Suck, 0.
That's right. Paul and Storm, this is a quick new feature, as has been described. Both of our microphone stands are sitting on books on the desks, so that they will be at talking height.
So
what do you got supporting your mic stand today, Storm?
We are inaugurating the book report.
Yes, so, that's right. Sorry, that's it. Yes, the Paul and Storm book report.
Working from the top down, I have the DVD box set of The State. Not strictly a book, but there it is. It's thick enough.
Yeah.
I have Modern Warfare 2 under that.
Also not a book.
Also not a book, but you can read the cover.
Yep.
The third one is a book, one that I'd been saving up for this very trip to entertain me on the plane in the airport when I was tired of the world and the internet and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It is Stories, which is a compilation of stories that was edited by Neil Gaiman and reading the bottom name. Al Serantonio, which was terrific.
Yeah.
And it is also a Paul and Storm recommend. So that is supporting me, or at least supporting my microphone.
That's right. For me, I have a couple of the John Scalzi books that I had last week. I have a copy of Professor Jim Kakalios' Physics of Superheroes, and on top I have the hardback edition of, I'll have to lift it up to get the title right, Live from New York, the oral history, uncensored history of Saturday Night Live by Tom Shales and James Andrew Miller, which is one of my favoritest books. It is also easily my best bathroom reading. I just, it's just, you know, little snippets. I go back and just read little bits as I sit on the can and do what I have to do as a human.
If you like the peek behind the curtain of things that you're familiar with, that book is phenomenal.
I do. So there's that. I'm sorry. Very quickly, we have a new gig. We have two gigs coming up, but we have a specific new one. On August 14th, as has been mentioned, we're going to be at Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia. On August 21st, we are going to be in Ardmore, PA, just outside of Philadelphia, at Milk Boy Coffee, a place we have done a number of shows. It's always fun. One of our favorite little venues. We want to get the word out on this one because it's the middle of August in Philadelphia and it's only a month away. So we really want more than 4 people there. So if you're anywhere in the area, we promise it'll be a fun show.
Yeah. Please do, for all the folks who've, you know, said, wow, I really want to see Paul and Storm do their whole big full act and, you know, not just the opening set. We're here to do that.
Yep.
We are here to do that.
And of course we're going to be at PAX in Seattle on Labor Day weekend. September 3rd through 6th, 5th, I believe we're on the Saturday evening concert. I don't know if that's official, but that is my understanding, subject to change. And I think that's all the business, seeing as we're at the almost 43 minute mark.
Well, it is official that I'm Storm.
It is also official that I am Paul.
And we have been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Free Molly!
Go do things.